welcome back to another episode of the Wonder Podcast, the podcast where we break down and review films all in one big, long, unbroken take. I'm Austin Archer, and with me, as always, is my childhood next-door neighbor and lifelong best friend,
Kramer England.
I'm wearing a shirt with a cow on it.
Yes.
Because there's a cameo from a cow in this movie.
Yes.
That Gwildor tries to talk to at one point. And then I've also got a hat on from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So this is my tribute to Steve.
And oh, yeah,
also,
yeah,
there's
yeah.
a tiger in the middle of my hat.
For the
tiger that's in the cartoon.
Yeah, yeah.
What's his name? Like Tigor or something?
Something like that.
Everybody in the... So this is Masters of the Universe 1987.
Yes.
Directed by Gary Goddard.
Gary Goddard.
You know, famed filmmaker Gary Goddard.
Yeah.
Everything from the Masters of the Universe, everyone's name is like, if you're a lion, your name's like Lionel. And then if you're a tiger, it's like Tigor.
And
like if you're He-Man, your name is He-Man.
Yeah.
If you're a skull guy, your name is Skeletor. If you're evil, your name is Evil-in.
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 Yeah.
If you're a beast man, your name is Beast Man.
Yeah. They don't give you any lines.
Yeah, they blade and beast.
Blade. And every blade, you walk around like this so people could see your blades.
Yeah.
This movie, I
owned this movie on VHS growing up.
Yes.
We probably watched this at least 10 sleepovers.
Yeah. I feel like it was on all the time.
Now, this was after Rocky IV. Rocky IV was 1985, and so Dolph Lundgren was like a big hit in that movie. And I think the role of Ivan Drago fits Dolph Lundgren's acting sensibilities really well because he doesn't have to say much, and he's sort of a presence. And Dolph Lundgren does have a presence.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Like he's got a vibe to him on screen, but like we were laughing so hard. I watched this with a bunch of friends. We were laughing so hard anytime he had to speak. And it feels like a movie where it's like, was there a draft of the script where he had a lot more lines?
And, I think there was.
And they just kept cutting his lines.
Yeah.
Cause I don't remember this as a kid that like, he doesn't speak almost ever in this movie.
Yeah. He really doesn't. And that is actually like when I was doing some of the Wonder Funners, it was like, they cast him because of his physique, because he looks like He-Man. And he does. He looks like it.
He's ripped. He looks great.
Oh, yeah. He's perfect for the role physically. But they were like, they you know, he still has his Swedish accent and they just didn't give him lines. They also didn't like the way that he was playing the character. So
they wanted him to be more. I saw your Wonder Funner. It's like they wanted him to be more like the cartoon, like more, you know,
more animated and bigger and American. And
I kind of like his approach, like with this soft, subtle thing. Yeah. It's just that sometimes they'll cut to him and he'll say a line and you'll be like, what did you just say? He'll just be like, well, you mean it's like, you know, or he'll just be like, we'll do it. Where did you get that door over there? You know, and it's just funny too, because he's ostensibly the main character of the film.
Yeah.
But this is a movie where it's really hard to tell who the protagonist is.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it
switches all the time.
Is it Courtney Cox? Is it He-Man? It should be He-Man.
Is it Skeletor? Yeah. It really should be He-Man.
But because he speaks so infrequently and so much of his screen time is just sort of like nonverbal presence in no clothes, and he's the only character from Eternia that dresses the way that he dresses, by the way.
It's like
it would be one thing if it's like he's from a planet where people dress like that. He's not.
It's like in this planet they have guns, and the other guy, Man at Arms, which is the dumbest name ever.
Exactly, everyone's name is just like
is what they do.
Yeah. Like, Man at Arms, which is why she has the line Woman at Arms.
Yeah, which was so... If you had a guy whose name was Janitor, He'd like have a mop and like,
yeah,
I am Janitor, you know, like it's just
He-Man. Anything.
But he's wearing armor. Man at Arms is wearing armor because there's guns. He-Man's like,
his daughter is wearing. Yeah. They're decked out and like, yeah, like what? And when you see the citizens of Eternia, which sometimes will be on Eternia, and Skeletor will be like, he'll be like, people of Eternia.
Yeah.
And then they show it and they've got like budget for like 12 extras. It's just sort of like 12 people like standing watching this like video address. Yeah. And they're all fully clothed. As far as we can tell, in all of Eternia, nobody dresses like He-Man except for He-Man.
He's got to show off, you know?
Yeah. But it's weird because, again, it's like he should be the main character of the movie with the most screen time. But because they had to cut most of his lines, he's just this like guy that like occasionally will like cut to a wide and he's just standing there with the group with no clothes on. And you're like, what is that guy? And it's like, well, he's the main character. And it's like, is he?
Yeah.
Like, every once in a while, he's like, let's make sure we go out the back door.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah. Gwildor, I need your help.
Yeah,
Gwildor, and that's it.
Calm down, my friend.
That's really, man, this movie is a trip, man.
And you talked about how Dolph Lundgren is a smart guy.
Yes,
you know, like
he's a very accomplished, in academics for sure. He has a master's in chemical engineering, and he was at MIT before he decided to pursue acting. But yeah, he's a smart guy.
Which it's not. I think people would mistake him for like a kind of a male bimbo.
Yes. Oh yeah.
You know, totally. Like a blonde, muscle bound, kind of dummy, and that's why he sounds the way he sounds. But no, it's just that like English is not his first language.
Yeah.
And you know, and just because he's a really smart person doesn't mean he's going to necessarily be like a great actor or you know.
I think honestly, you can see the filmmakers' lack of faith in him.
Yeah,
because they did all this, right? Because you never see him, because he doesn't talk that much. But it's like really like the way that he played the character, like you said, I got it. Like I thought he played the character well, but they just needed to have a little more faith in him. And don't worry about his accent. He's from another planet.
Like, yeah,
he can have an accent. Who cares?
I think you're right. I think that it's like the movie kind of does him dirty and the edit kind of does him dirty.
I think they did that.
They don't like trust. Because what's weird is as a kid, I had no question who was the main character in the
movie. Oh, yeah.
Like I knew who I was watching the movie for.
Exactly.
I knew who I kept coming back. It was that big giant sword, which is awesome.
Oh, yeah.
I love that sword.
Very cool.
And like when we were kids, it was all about like Stallone and Schwarzenegger and big strong guys taking their shirts off and you know, like we gotta like admit that like the 80s was unapologetically homoerotic with their action stars. They were like, look, these boys,
testosterone filled, and
like Rambo is going to end the movie with no shirt on, okay? Because that's what you're here for, that's why you bought a ticket. And it's like, like we're watching Dolph Lundgren and we're like, heck yeah, he's all like oiled up and check him out, dude.
Huge,
he's a specimen. And you know, nobody else was like stealing the spotlight from him. But it was weird watching as an adult. I was like, he really kind of feels like an afterthought in the screenplay.
He does.
Or in the way that the film is edited. He's just sort of there.
He is. Yep. He's just there. He's not really he has the presence like you're talking about, but he doesn't have watching it this time, I'm like, he's barely in the movie.
Yeah.
Like he's not, and they have huge chunks. Just like you said, who's the protagonist of this movie? Because we've got He-Man at the beginning and then he goes away. And we've got Courtney Cox setting up like, oh, I'm going to go to college and my parents are dead. And like, and then you've got, and she's like, I want to break up with my boyfriend. And then you've got her boyfriend who comes in and is like, oh, I can, at the end of the movie is more like, oh, I can play an instrument. They're like, you know how to play an instrument? Like
it's when he can remember the melody.
Yeah.
Like, we were
what
all like,
sorcery is this? Like, okay, what?
I'm sorry. On Eternia, there's nobody who can like hum a melody.
Like, what is this planet?
Okay. Well, it is funny because it does seem like Gwildor doesn't know how to operate the cosmic key.
No,
like it seems like Gwildor's like, I just push buttons. And he's just like, he's like, I made this thing by accident and I just sort of go.
It's so true.
And it's just like, and then when Steve's like, oh, I can do it. Doon, 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 doon. He's like, what? How did you do that?
They're like making this very mediocre musician feel like he's an amazing musician.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was so then in the end, well, and then He-Man it could be like, back, but
it could be the cop guy too. Like he's got a big chunk of the storyline. Yeah.
I mean, you could tell a lot of things from this movie. You can tell that the budget was strained.
Yeah.
I mean, the movie opens really pretty much like it's opens in the middle of the conflict. Like
I'll give it points for this, that like the movie never, like it starts like we're going.
Yes.
And yeah. I kind of dug this about it, because I never thought about this as a kid, but like the fact that it's one day.
Yeah.
That the whole movie is one day.
In one day. Yep.
And that like it kind of is like it does have a nice pace to it.
The pace is good and it does work. But it is, it's a little like watching it now, I'm surprised. Like, oh wow, you guys really just went for it. And this is the thing too. Like everything they do, they go for it. You know, Gary Goddard, he is going for it. And he went for it, and you got to appreciate it for that, because you know, Frank Langella's really hamming it up, which works really well. Everything kind of works for the movie, but that doesn't mean that it's a good movie in many other aspects. But yeah, the pacing is really, really good. It just goes. And like as a kid, that's kind of what you want. It does drag a little over the entirety of the movie, I think, because of the change of who the story's about. But
we've got to know, like, if we're going to go to Earth and we're going to have He-Man and the Eternians run into some Earthlings, we've got to meet those people and we've got to learn. And I think that like the movie does a good job of like not making those scenes too laborious. Like,
yes.
You know, like there's a lot of emotional stuff that we're trying to get into with Julie's character, which maybe like the movie just doesn't need that. Like, I don't think we need that Julie's parents died in a plane crash and that's why she's moving away.
Super weird.
Because it's like this layer of like heaviness to her character that just doesn't, I think it could just be as simple as Steven and Julie are graduating high school and she's just moving to another town for college, which happens all the time to high school sweethearts. And we don't need the thing of her parents being dead, because that's just one. I think they're just trying to give the movie a little bit of heart and a little, you know, but it's like it's a little bit of just like a, oh, that's a whole other thing that we
know,
you know,
it's a weird thing that it doesn't seem very necessary.
I will say this. We all felt this too. We were all like, Courtney Cox does a good job in this movie.
Oh yeah.
You can see why she made it out of this film and was one of the only people from the film to like, outside of like Frank Langella to be like, to have a career after this, you know?
I think, but that's the other problem, is that 3/4 way through the movie, she's not in it anymore until the very end. She, and I mean, so I think she does do well, but when she gets taken out of it, it's kind of weird. Also, I got to say, though, every time she screamed, which I don't think this is really her, this was probably the director, she's like, no!
It's the hands. It's the hands and the hair. Yeah, the hair. And the, that was definitely like her move. And maybe that's the director. Maybe, but she does it several times.
It was like, wow, that's a scream. Like,
She does the grabbing the hair several times. Yeah. Okay. We also need to talk about the way that, and I can't believe, I guess I just didn't notice this as a kid. Maybe I did notice it and I just thought like, that's just what movies do, or like, that's just fine.
Right.
But like how much this movie is just aesthetically and stylistically just ripping off other movies blatantly.
I saw so many Star Wars ripoffs.
It's mostly Star Wars.
Yes.
It's like mostly Star Wars. But then that, like, it's like I always kind of remembered the musical score of this movie being pretty iconic. Mm-hmm. But then as soon as the opening credits started, everyone that I was watching it with was like, so this is just the Star Wars, or the Superman score. This is just the John Williams Superman score with the Superman credits. And I was like, yeah,
it was like a total ripoff.
Yeah. So Superman goes, bum ba bum ba 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 bum.
Yeah.
Bum ba 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 ba. But this one goes bum ba bum ba 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 bum ba 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 bum ba ba bum bum ba 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 bum 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 bum. But they're like so similar.
Oh yeah.
And literally, it just seems like they, whoever did the musical score for this, they were like, how close can you get it to the John Williams Superman score without us getting sued?
Even my son was watching it and he's like, this looks like Star Wars. But it is it's some sort of weird combination of Star Wars and Superman, and it just looks like the cheap knockoff of Superman, because it wasn't even like the coming in, it was just like kind of came from the side and it trailed.
So it's the classic Superman like style credits with the flat, but they're like worse and not as good. And then most the film is Star Wars, but then there are little elements of like the Dark Crystal. There's a lot of the, like Gwildor's little place that he lives in is almost, it's so similar to the place that the little goblin woman lives in the Dark Crystal.
Yeah.
Olgra, like when you go in there, you're like, this is Olgra's house. Like this is like, and Gwildor's so like, he's so Muppety. He's so like, you know.
I have to say, Bill Conti did the score for this, and he also scored Rocky.
Okay.
I mean, he's an Academy Award winning composer, but I'm sure the director was just like,
I'll say that,
how close can you get?
The part of the score that I really like is the Cosmic Key theme. Bum, 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 bum. But even that's a little bit Close Encounters.
Yeah, it is.
Bum, 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 bum. Like, it's just a little bit, like, everything in the film just feels weirdly derivative. Like, everything just feels like they're just going, like, a little bit of that, a little bit of this. And again, mostly it's Star Wars. Mm-hmm. To the point that, like, we were even just going through and just going, like, every character is just, like, a cut and paste. Like, Skeletor is the Emperor, 100%.
Yeah.
Evelyn, or the guy with the blonde hair, is Darth Vader. Either one of them is Darth, or they're like a combination of like them, you know, because he's got the helmet hair.
And he looks more like Lord Helmet from Spaceballs, but
totally. Darth Vader.
Yeah.
You know, Skeletor's guards are just stormtroopers. Like they are just straight up. Some of them have the exact same helmets as the stormtroopers that you see on the Death Star, like the ones that wear the black.
It's
identical. And then we were like joking around. We were like, Gwildor's like C-3PO and R2-D2 mixed into one character. And then we were laughing about this. We were like, He-Man is Luke Skywalker, but he's wearing Slave Leia's clothes. He's wearing the exact same costume as Carrie Fisher from Return of the Jedi.
Yeah. That's accurate.
And then the woman, Twyla or whatever her name is, she is Han Solo, and her dad, Man of Arms, is Chewie.
Yeah, Tila, I think it's her
Tila,
name.
Tila, and her dad is Chewie.
It was very blatant this time watching it. And they even were trying to like promote the movie as this is Star Wars of the 80s.
Which Star Wars did happen in the 80s. Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi happened in the 80s.
I know. So it's pretty clear.
Also, I love the scene when they send Skeletor's like best fighters to go get the Cosmic Key, and it's like Blade and Beastman and the Reptile One.
Yeah.
And that's literally the scene from Empire Strikes Back when they send Boba Fett and like a reptile guy
and the toilet paper guy.
And I think there's even like a beast guy, I'm not mistaken, to go find Han Solo. Like they get, you know. Which I just was like, this is, it's crazy how much this is Star Wars.
And that introduction too, like, we will send our best warriors, Blade. And they like step forward and he like shows off his blades and the Beast Man. And he's like, rawr. It's like reptile guy, and his like throat is throbbing or whatever.
Yeah.
And then the other guy, Helmet Head.
I think Reptile Guy, I don't know what his name is, but I think Reptile Guy has like one of the better masks that I believe in. I'll say this, like, Frank Langella is eating it up is in another tier of all than all the other actors that he's on screen with. But we've talked about this before on this show that we are currently in what I think is undisputably the golden age of prosthetic makeup. Right. Like Colin Farrell as the Penguin, The Rock in the Smashing Machine, Bradley Cooper in Maestro. Like there's some really amazing work being done that is kind of seamless and crazy how realistic it looks.
Oh yeah.
And Frank Langella is wearing a Spirit Halloween mask that is that is like glued to his face in this movie. Like
his upper lip doesn't move.
It is, it's not very good makeup. And like the whole like painted nostrils thing where you're just like, I can see that those are painted. Where it's like supposed to be like the, you know, like the empty holes of a skull face, but it's like I can see that that's just painted black.
Well, and they like try to put a jawline on there, but it like just blends in that it just kind of looks like a line.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, I understand they couldn't do just like a talking skeleton because that would be weird. I'm really wondering how they're going to pull it off in the new one. But
well, it just looks CG, right?
But it also CG. Like if he talks, he's going to talk like a Muppet, you know, like how are you going to make his teeth move? Like, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how they make him talk, but in, you know, kind of like, You can lean into the fact that you can't do that and change his character a little bit more. I don't know.
I almost think that like the best design choice you could do is like have his head be a skull, but the mouth never opens. Like the voice just comes out. You know, I don't know. Cause you're right. Without lips, if it's just like, hey, it's like,
how do you talk?
I don't know. We'll see. You know?
It'll be interesting to see what they do, but
either
way, Frank Langella's makeup is very strange, but it also just kind of works. Like he goes with it. He makes it, it doesn't seem like it's a hindrance at all to what he's doing.
I'll say as far as like things that, even if they are derivative, they were like still working for me. Overall, the costume design in the film still works for me. Like I feel like that and some of the production design is solid enough. Like I think that the throne room at Castle Grayskull is still an impressive set. I think some of the prop design, like I think that like some of the guns and the sword are really cool. And they were as cool as I remembered them in my little kid brain. Like I still think He-Man's sword is like, hell yeah. That's dope. It's awesome. And I feel like, even though Dolph Lundgren's clothes are ridiculous, I think he looks cool. And, you know, like
he pulls it off.
And to be fair, like that's He-Man in the cartoon. Listen, they dress Dolph Lundgren skimpier than the cartoon. Like he's wearing less than but it's still always like He-Man's not wearing a lot of clothes in the cartoon version. And I like Skeletor's costume. I like, and I also like his like transformation into gold guy at the end. I don't know. We were joking about this, right? I don't know what changes power wise. He doesn't seem to get any more powerful. Like,
no,
he just all of a sudden has gold clothes, but
yeah. And he's got a big old Power Rangers headdress.
It's very Rita Repulsa from Power Rangers.
Oh, totally. Yeah. And I'm like, wouldn't that make it harder to fight? You've got this big heavy thing on crown, whatever it is. But
here's the thing we need to talk about, because this is just the lore of He-Man.
Yeah.
Apparently, and at least this is how it's presented in the movie, Castle Grayskull in Eternia is the domain of the sorceress.
Yeah.
And it's also where He-Man derives his power from. So the sword of Grayskull, He-Man's sword, if he's in Castle Grayskull and he calls upon the universe power.
Yeah,
and he says I have the power, he becomes He-Man. So in the cartoon, He-Man will walk around in like normal clothes. He'll have like a tunic on and like a t-shirt and like pants, but then if he pulls the sword out and says I have the power, his clothes go away and he becomes more naked and he becomes I guess, like, more powerful He-Man.
Yeah.
And he's ready to fight. But it's weird to me because it's like, doesn't Castle Grayskull just aesthetically to you look like it should be Skeletor's castle?
Oh, yeah. It looks like an evil lair.
Yeah.
I mean, the front entrance is a skull that has huge fangs. I was like when I was a kid, I didn't pay attention to any of it because I just thought it was Skeletor's mansion or lair or whatever. But like when I watched it this time, I was like, wait, Castle Grayskull is like the good place?
Yeah.
Like, how is that even possible? It doesn't make any sense because it looks so evil.
It looks clearly like that's it's like it's so stereotypically evil looking.
Yeah.
And it's also like got a skull as the entrance, so it just seems like that's where Skeletor goes. And I too as a kid was just like, oh yeah, Castle Grayskull is Skeletor's thing.
Yeah.
But it's like, no, the whole plot of this movie is at the very beginning of the movie, Skeletor has just finished taking over Castle Grayskull. Yeah. He has invaded Castle Grayskull. He used the cosmic key to get inside the castle walls and do an ambush and take over the castle. And he's locked the sorceress in some kind of force field prison.
Yeah.
And He-Man and his friends escape and they find Gwildor. Just, I guess, like by chance,
randomly.
And very convenient on the, and Gwildor helps them escape to Earth, where we set most of the movie for budget reasons.
Yep.
And in that day, for some reason, after capturing Castle Grayskull, Skeletor's like, well, we can't let them just be on some alien planet with our cosmic key. We got to go get it. Even though it's like, who cares? You have Castle. Your whole thing was to be the ruler of Castle Grayskull so that you could be the master of the universe.
Yeah.
But the plot of the film is Skeletor is sending his people after He-Man and his friends on Earth to retrieve the cosmic key. And I think because Skeletor's got just like a personal bone to pick with He-Man and he wants to make sure that like he...
Yeah, doesn't come back or whatever.
Or brings him back so that he can torture him and kill him himself or whatever.
Yeah.
But it all takes place like in a day. And, you know, He-Man and his friends meet some humans. It's Courtney Cox and her boyfriend. And they're fighting Skeletor's people on Earth. But that, like, the whole plot is like He-Man and his friends trying to get Castle Grayskull back from Skeletor.
Yeah.
But watching it as an adult, I was like, it's so weird that Castle Grayskull is what, and it would make more sense to me if, like, you know, the way that Skeletor transforms at the end into Rita Repulsa, it's like, well, what if the castle initially looked more like the sorceress? If it was like a crystal castle, like kind of like in the Dark Crystal, how like there's like the good ones. And then when they are evil, they're the Skeksis, but together they make they were separated into the good ones that go, and the Skeksis that go, and when you put them together, they're like these beings of light. It's like, well, maybe when the sorceress is in charge of the castle, it's like a crystally beautiful, pretty castle.
Yeah.
But when Skeletor takes it over, it like, The crystals crumble away and it becomes this like evil place.
That's what I thought. I mean, I thought that same thing. That would have made it at least like, but also the name Castle Grayskull, like Skeletor Skull. Anyway, it's just kind of like a weird thing that doesn't make sense. So
I'll be completely honest. I watched this movie probably 50 to 100 times as a kid. Yeah. I never watched the cartoon. So no, I'm not
me neither.
Yeah, so I'm not that familiar with like the lore of the comics and the cartoon.
Yeah.
Everything I know is from this movie.
Yeah, me too. Like I've seen some of the stuff from the cartoon, but I never watched it really.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but I mean it is Castle Grayskull. That's and it does look like that. As far as I know, like that's what it looks like whether the good sorceress or Skeletor has taken it over. It just looks inherently evil.
Yeah. And I couldn't explain to my friends who they didn't really know anything about He-Man either.
Yeah.
I was like, trying to explain to them at the end of the movie, I was like, no, He-Man's got to get his sword back so that he can say, I have the power and be He-Man. And they were like, wait, is he not He-Man right now? I was like, no, he's He-Man. And they were like, well, so what is he going to do? I was like, no, if he gets the sword and he says, I have the power, then he's He-Man. And they were like, but is he He-Man right now? I was like, no, he is, but he's not like as good of He-Man as he could be.
He's not like, full He-Man.
Like, you know, I was like, honestly, I can't tell you what the difference between He-Man with the sword and He-Man without the sword is. I don't know. Like, we don't actually see in the movie that like the sword makes him super powered and without it, he's like a normal guy. Because that'd be one thing. If it was like Shazam, where it's like he, you know, like with the sword, he has the power to become Dolph, or you know, like Steve Rogers pre-serum versus Steve Rogers after the serum. But like, it doesn't seem like anything changes for either Skeletor or He-Man when they also, it's like Skeletor like changes into the gold Skeletor at the end, but it's like, you've had the throne of Grayskull the entire film. Why are you doing this now?
It's convoluted. I mean, it's also the reason that they, I mean, they go to Earth just to get out of there. Because, excuse me, they're in a bad situation. And then the rest of the plot for most of the film is just like, we've got to get back to Grayskull. It's like, oh, but where's the key? Oh, I don't know. We got to go find the key. And then, oh no, Skeletor has the key. Now we got to get it back from him. And then like, oh no, we've got the key, but we can't make the tones. And then it's like, oh, I can make the tones. And then they get back to Grayskull, and then it's such a weird plot. It doesn't really like, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
The lore is like how the power dynamics in Eternia work, and like what specifically the power of Grayskull is. It's very vague for me. I'm like it's not quite like the Force where I'm like, oh, I get it. You either are Force sensitive and you can feel the Force and use the Force, or you're not. This is just something where it's like, hey, if you're in the castle of Grayskull and you like, Skeletor doesn't even need to say, I have the power, or raise the sword. You would think that that would be it, that Skeletor would be like, I have to get the sword so that I can. But instead he's like, I'll take it and I'll just sort of keep it.
Over there.
He's like, I don't really need it. But it's like, then what's the point of the Sword of Grayskull? Like, does it only work for He-Man? Like, I'm just very, and that's the kind of thing is, I'm like, I'm sure this is explained better in the comics and in the TV show. What I think is funny about this movie is how it just feels no obligation to explain to the audience at all. It's just like, hey, it's He-Man. Shut up. Here we go. It's like,
it really is like, they kind of explain along the way, but when you break it down, it doesn't make any sense.
Like, if you're just watching this and you've never heard of any of this before, you're like, what is any of this? The movie just starts and it's like, oh man, Skeletor just took over Castle Grayskull. And you're like, who took over what? And it's like, shut up. He-Man and his friends, they just found Gwildor and they're going to use the cosmic key to go to Earth. And it's like, I don't know who any of these people are. It's like, shut up. They're going to Earth. Shut up. Stop. Shut up.
Stop talking. Look at He-Man.
Okay.
Why did they name him He-Man?
Good journey.
Whatever they do. It's like it was so weird.
Good journey. They go to, it is funny that they just like run into Gwildor randomly and he's just like, he's just like, come into my house and I will show you.
Thank goodness I have the key. It's okay.
All right, great. Gwildor is, he's like a little bit C-3PO, a little bit R2-D2, a little bit Yoda. They go to Earth. They see a cow. That's how we know we're on Earth. And somehow Gwildor immediately gets that cows say moo, even though the cow kind of goes, he's just like, moo,
moo,
moo, moo, moo. He tries to talk to the cow. We meet, you know, Julie and Steve.
Yeah.
We find out that Julie's sad about her dead parents. Julie and Steve find the cosmic key. And I did always kind of like, I was always a little bit like, I liked the kind of mystical nature of this, that Steve's a musician and he thinks he's found this like little noisemaker.
Yeah, synth.
But yeah. I like that you just push that red button, and that it's like, that's the funny thing, is it's like Gwildor apparently built this like really complicated thing that he doesn't even seem to know how to work. When Gwildor's using it, he just does that. But then it's like, if you push that red button, it opens a trans-dimensional gate. And there's a few of these little visual effects that I'm like, I don't mind that. I like the little floating
good
light
for the time.
I even kind of like the portal effect. I'm like, it's not, that's not the worst, you know.
No, it's fine. Yeah, it and I mean, yeah, a lot of the visual effects, again, were good for the 80s and good for the budget that they had, relatively, you know. So
the surfing on the things is pretty rough.
Yeah,
like the hoverboards,
the discs,
the hover discs.
Yeah,
like there's some pretty funny shots of Dolph Lundgren like hunched. But also, like, Gary Goddard, who just, you know, I don't know. I'm, in my head, he's just like this really plucky guy with like big, I don't know what, I have no idea what he looks like. In my head, he's got big thick glasses and he's like, we're making a picture, you know, like, but I think like his action scene directing is, it leaves something to be desired. Like some of the fight scenes, I was like, I wish we weren't cutting so much and doing so much. You know, but there's a few sequences here like that still kind of work for me. I remember as a kid, there's this scene when Steve and Julie are at the high school, because Steve's band, I guess, is going to play for like the high school dance or something.
Something, yeah. That nobody's at, or he's going to do a sound check or something. Yeah.
Yeah. And they activate the cosmic key, and that tells Skeletor and his brute squad where to go, where, you know, where they need to go.
Yeah.
But this scene as a kid always terrified me, when like Blade and Beastman show up in the high school and Courtney Cox is by herself and they all try to like, when they're like coming through the like the tinsel, and when Blade's and still this scene kind of like, it kind of got me watching it. I was like, this is intense. This is scary.
Well, yeah, you know? they do a good job, because they set up the stakes that a random guy is, for some reason, there's a random guy. They're like, hey, you kids can't be in here. And then they throw him across the room.
Yeah.
So like they set up that like they mean business. And Courtney Cox is kind of like, she is really scared, which it is also just kind of funny that they're like, no, get that girl. Like, how do they know that she has the key? Like, what? But whatever. But it is at least set up that like these guys are a threat.
Yeah. So I like this scene of her crawling under the stage and Blade's swords jam. I was like, that's fun. That's that's a fun little thing. I do think it's hilarious. We all laughed really hard. I think it's really hilarious that she exits the school and runs around the corner, and she runs right into He-Man.
Yeah.
And like, I know she's being chased by like a bunch of monster people, but she runs into this guy again with no clothes on, and and he's wearing a big giant red cape, and he just goes, don't worry, I'll take care of you, you're safe. And he just picks her up and just carries her, and just carries her like into like a little like factory with like a bunch of like yard with a bunch of boxes. And it's like, I don't know if you go with that guy.
I don't trust that guy who doesn't have any clothes on.
Random naked guy with a giant sword and a cape is like, don't worry, you're safe.
Yeah.
and he just picks her up, and she's like, okay.
She's like, there are these monsters. And he's like, yeah, okay. Also, the fact that this guy, this random half naked, well, almost naked man is like, believes in what you've said about monsters, should also kind of be a red flag.
Don't worry, it's okay. And so He-Man has a little fight with these guys, and you know, then this is kind of a fun little sequence.
There's also so many things in this. So like, Blades is like, sees He-Man and he's like, I've been waiting a long time to do this. And I was like, how would we know that? Like, what do you mean you've been waiting a long time? Like, who are you?
It's like, this movie is just sort of like, if you don't know who any of these people are or what this is, I don't care. This movie's just like, listen, these are characters that exist in a comic strip and a yeah. cartoon outside of this movie. And if you don't know about it, don't worry. Yeah. We're not really sticking to that either. So who cares? But yeah, they have a fun little fight. I kind of like, again, it's like, I just wish that we weren't cutting around so much, but I think this like two swords on one is kind of fun. And then he takes one of Blade's swords and that's kind of fun. And Blade goes, my sword.
Yeah.
And,
that's my whole identity.
Yeah. No, my blade. And then, you know, they return. It's funny how easily they give up. Like they like,
retreat.
Yeah.
They're not out of there quick.
Yeah. They're not successful in like the first 5 minutes they're there. And they just go straight back to Castle Grayskull. And they're like, sorry, He-Man was really scary. Yeah. Just like, sorry.
And like, then he kills the reptile guy.
Yeah,
Skeletor also, kills the reptile guy.
We're so vague on what Skeletor's powers are in this movie. Yeah. Like he's at this point, he like disintegrates the reptile guy.
Yeah.
And as like a warning to the others. And it's also like, of all the people you should have killed, the reptile guy, like he didn't do anything. Like the others failed you way worse. You know, like kill Helmet Hair. He's the leader, you know. But Reptile Guy's like not even saying anything. He's just minding his own business. He's like, I'm going to kill him.
That's so true.
But kills the Reptile Guy. But, and again, it's like at the end of the movie, we're meant to be led to the conclusion that Skeletor has now been given. It's sort of like when Jafar turns into like the most powerful sorcerer in the world at the end of Aladdin.
Yeah.
And we can tell like, oh, Jafar has gone from like just a guy who's got a few parlor tricks to a person with genuine power. But there's nothing that seems to like Skeletor is shooting lightning out of his hands and making people disintegrate and is an incredibly imposing figure already. And all that happens is he's just like, now I'm wearing a gold suit.
Yeah. And my staff is now gold, too.
But he doesn't use any new powers on He-Man. He doesn't like show any new power. I don't know. It's all very strange. But,
it is. It is very strange. And I mean, it's I mean, we kind of went over everything because after they kind of run around and then the principal from Back to the Future. He's comes in. James Tolkien, I guess, is his name.
Really?
Yeah.
His name's James Tolkien?
T-O-L-K-A-N.
Wow.
Tolkien, yeah.
So, James Tolkien.
Yeah. Wow. The bald guy who looked old when he was 20 years old or something. You know, like.
Yeah.
He comes in and he's like, he plays the exact same character as Back to the Future.
Yeah.
He's like, don't mouth off to me, kid. I'm going to take you downtown. And he comes in.
He's kind of a hard-nosed cop.
Yeah. And they do ultimately.
He's pretty useless. Like, to be honest, like he doesn't really help at all.
No, you take him out of the movie, it still works just fine. No,
he does not need to be there. And I don't even really think we need like, Kevin is, I keep saying Steve, Kevin is the boyfriend.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Right.
I don't know.
Who's the guy whose store they're at?
Oh, let's see. Yeah, no, Kevin is the boyfriend. And I guess Steve, I think, is the owner of the place.
Is that right?
But Kevin is the boyfriend.
Robert Duncan McNeil as Kevin. Okay, Kevin. Yeah. Billy Barty as Gwildor. Evil-Lyn. That's so funny. Evil-Lyn. Yeah, is so good. Man at Arms, that's so crazy. James Tolkien, he doesn't need to be in this movie. Charlie, Barry Livingston. Plays Charlie. Wow. Yes. That's wild. I'm fine with Charlie being in there. It's like every 80s movie needed like a plucky kind of like, but I don't think we need the cop.
No, we don't.
And he's just kind of there, I guess, to just be another Earth person to be like, what is going on? Like, what, you know, and we're sort of trying to do this fish out of water thing that and I will say that there's not a lot for Man at Arms or Tila to do.
Yeah.
In this, you know.
Well, and it was funny. Every time they do anything, they're not, I'm not convinced by them at all. Especially Tila. She holds a gun like this.
Yeah.
And then just like shoots. And it's, yeah. It's like, I don't believe it at all. And yeah, it's like, they're not really, any of them aren't really like making it look real. They're yeah. all just kind of using the weapons in a way that doesn't feel like that's how you would use it.
And that's another thing we can give Dolph Lundgren is like, of all the characters in the film, like he looks the coolest in the action sequences. But I yeah. would still, again, I'd say the way that Gary Goddard shoots these and edits these doesn't
no.
let him shine as much as he could. I think that like the sequence that he winds up looking the coolest in is in the final sequence back in Eternia.
Yeah.
Like I like, cause my friends even asked, they were like, is he ever going to do like strong guy stuff? Like, isn't he even supposed to like, isn't he supposed to be like super strong? And then he like pushes that statue over and I was like, yeah, see, there he goes. And I was like, yeah. yeah. You know, but it's like, yeah, we could use more of that. Like we could use a little bit more of He-Man, like picking things up and like throwing things at people or I don't know. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
I mean, they had the constraints at the time, but
yeah,
it is also just like that. They didn't, I mean, you look at it, you look at an action movie at the same time, they did a lot cooler things, you know, like Stallone movies and Schwarzenegger movies. The fighting was a lot more choreographed. Like they cheaped out on that, you know.
I mean, so. I don't know if this is true, but my friend that I was watching it with at one point, he was reading all about it while we were watching it. And he was mm-hmm. like, this was a non-union production, apparently. And I was like, what? Oh, that's what he said. And I was like, that, first of all, that blows my mind.
Yeah.
Because we've got like too. Frank Langella here and we've got, you know, like I guess Barry they just Barty picked and
their unions.
Yeah. So who knows? And I'm sure that Dolph Lundgren would have had to have joined the Screen Actors Guild after doing Rocky IV.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know. Who knows if that's true?
They
or
could have
not,
just been SAG signatory. You don't have to be signatory to all the unions.
FICOR or something.
Yeah,
you know, something like that. But maybe there was a workaround for them to. But
yeah,
I really felt the budgetary constraints. Yeah. Watching it as an adult more than I did as a kid.
Oh yeah.
And yeah, there's this sequence where Skeletor winds up going to Earth to be like, fine, I'll just do it myself.
Yeah.
And he kind of brings his whole army of stormtroopers there and they are just, they're just stormtroopers.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember as a kid thinking that this was a lot more epic, like when they come through the portal, but then watching it now, I was like, boy, it really looks like they've got like maybe 20 extras as his soldiers, like maybe that many. And then he's on like what is very clearly a big parade float with like wheels that they're shooting at an angle to make it look like it's floating. And it's like, this is like not as cool as I remember it. You know, it just seems like, it all just seems like very like, I don't know, like kind of slapped together a little bit. And
it feels very B movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. It feels like, you know, they're just doing whatever they can to get to make the day.
Yeah. But he gets the key back and he puts some kind of electricity curse on Courtney Cox's leg.
Yeah.
At some point, Evelyn tricks Courtney Cox into giving her the key by pretending to be her mom, which, again, this scene always scared me as a kid when Evelyn like shows up in the alleyway is her pretending to be her dead mom. But then also we were like, why did Evelyn reveal herself to Courtney Cox after she gives her the key? Why was she like, thank you, my darling?
Yeah.
It's like, why not like take it and be like, thanks, sweetie. And then like, what, you know, it's like, why let her know that like,
Yeah.
I guess
you fell for the oldest trick in the book. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like, I guess that's just like the evil part. She's like,
yeah.
Ha ha. You gave it to me, you know?
Yeah.
And we get another Courtney Cox hair scream.
Yeah. And then they, all that happens, they end up having to go back to Grayskull and He-Man gives himself up to save everybody else.
So this effect when he's getting whipped, which by the way, also like I loved this, that like they bring He-Man out to kneel in front of Skeletor, but also part of Skeletor's like, I guess, punishment of He-Man is he's like, you know those little straps across his chest? Take those off. Like, yes, He-Man. We're not going to let you have your little shoulder pads and chest straps.
Yeah, those are too. They're too protective for you.
Take those off, He-Man. Now, He-Man, now that you are my prisoner, take off your clothes. It's like he's already not wearing clothes.
You didn't need to take those off.
You didn't need to, like, that's not doing anything. He's like, no, if we're going to whip you good, we need to take off your straps.
Oh, man.
I remember as a kid being like, oh, it's cool that He-Man shows up and he's like wearing even less clothes. I just was always like, it was always a signal to me as a kid in the 80s, like when watching 80s action movies, that like the movie was progressing as the hero got more and more undressed.
And less clothes. Yeah.
Yeah. You
like
know, it's
Predator.
Like
he's in it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Beginning of Rambo 2, he's like fully clothed in a prison outfit. And then as the film goes on, he just gets like less and less clothes on.
Right.
And same with like, you know, like, yeah, Predator, it's like less and less clothes as the movie goes on. So when Dolph Lundgren like shows up and it's just like all he was wearing the whole movie was two straps. And they're like, let's take these straps off of you, He-Man. And like these little gold shoulder pads, they're like, you won't be needing these anymore.
Yeah, these won't save you anymore. Yeah.
But we were also dying at this effect of Blade whipping He-Man with like an animated like laser whip.
Yeah.
And the animation is like pretty janky.
It's pretty bad.
They don't do a good job of like timing up when the animation hits him and when Dolph Lundgren reacts at all. And it's so clear that Dolph Lundgren, they were just like, yeah, just sort of like react occasionally. And so he's just sort of like,
Yeah. And then he's got like red lines that are clearly just like red lines.
Yeah. But I remember as a kid, this felt really intense because Skeletor's trying to get He-Man to kneel and He-Man showing how strong he is, that he can be whipped and he won't kneel.
Yeah.
Which again, I was like trying to explain to my friends, I was like, he's about to become He-Man and get that sword. And they were like, is he not He-Man right now? And I was like, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, the way that he gets out is he just like pulls off the constraints.
Well, Skeletor shoots lightning at him.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
But
then he just pulls the other one off, which I guess he couldn't reach it from before.
Because now he's strong, so he rips it off. But this is my favorite. There's like several big action sequences involving He-Man in the movie. Mm. And this is my favorite. It's
once
he breaks out of this thing and he's like kind of throwing Skeletor's stormtroopers around. And I like him like pushing this statue over. I think that's cool. And I do think it's cool when he goes to get the Sword of Grayskull and Skeletor's like zapping him and like hitting it. And he just like stands in the pain and like pulls the sword out.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's cool. Like that's
right.
You know, that's fun. Yeah.
That's who gets it. And then, I have the power.
Which again, it's like, what does this mean?
I know.
Think it would be really funny if his straps like came back, if they were like,
they're a little bit thicker.
They're a little bit thicker, you know, or they're just like a little bit thinner. They're like shoelaces now. It's like,
he needs even less to be protected.
It's like, I don't know what the logic is here, guys. I'm not, but you know, now him and Rita Repulsa, Golden Skeletor have like a fight that for some reason, all of the lighting in the room changes. The lighting's like, and it like goes into like very dramatic, like weird. It's like, I don't know why the lighting in this room is. And also it's just like, it seems like everybody else in the room just stops what they're doing and watches them fight.
Yeah.
It's like, there's a whole room full of like Teela and Man at Arms and the cop and they've all been fighting the stormtroopers. And then when He-Man and Skeletor start fighting, everyone just stops and just like the whole room's like, oh.
Oh, whoever wins is the winner. We'll give up. Yeah. Kind of like they just stop.
And Skeletor eventually gets the Emperor Palpatine death.
Like, he gets thrown down a pit, you know, or whatever.
It looks like a copy and paste shot.
It looks does. Like
it was like, wow, that is Emperor Palpatine from Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
100%.
Why did they have that pit there too? Like,
again, if Castle Grayskull is the good guys, castle, why is the main throne room surrounded by pits of lava? Like, what?
It doesn't make any sense.
This is all evil guy stuff. Like, this is all like, this is like literally Dr. Evil has a layer of lava. But, what are you talking about? But whatever. Yeah.
They save the day and then somehow they go back in time. Julie and Kevin go back in time. And then Julie's like, oh, mom and dad, you're still alive. Like, don't go on this flight. And she steals their keys. And then that's all that they're in the movie. Like, they're in there for like 2 minutes. And then she leaves. And then she's also back together with Kevin, which I thought was really weird.
It's like earlier. It's like, hey, well, it's back now. So, you know, and that was like part of their thing was like she was moving. But at the beginning of the movie, her friend was like, there's one thing I know. He loves you. And more importantly, you love him. You know? And so, you know, but again, it's like we're supposed to care about Kevin and Julie. And I guess it's good that she gets to save her parents. But again, it's like how the cosmic key is able to do that. I don't know.
Yeah.
And Gwildor, who has seemed completely befuddled by this thing that he invented the whole movie, is like, don't worry, I'll send you, you know, good journey, Julie. And he sends her, you know, but also I also love this, that like at the end, I love when the end of movies, everyone's like wearing a version of their costume, but it's like a cleaner, like, you know, like I like that He-Man shows up with like very bright gold arm.
And,
like, his hair is like all spiked up. And
he just looks clean. He's at a shower. In Castle Grayskull.
And also, like, the cop stays in Eternia.
Yeah, he's like, why would I want to go back? I'm like, what?
They give it, like, he's like, I got a woman here. It's like, who is that?
why did this all happen to you?
Did they just give you a wife? Were they just like, hey, you can stay here and marry her? Like, what is going on?
I know.
And also, like, how long have we been in, like, when we cut to this last scene and they're like, all right, we're sending Julie and Kevin back to Earth.
Yeah.
The cop is like, I'm going to stay right here. I got a job. I got a woman. And it's like, how long have we been here? Like, have you guys been here for like a month? And like, or is this like later that day? And they're like, he's like, I got a girlfriend now. I'm staying in Eternia.
Weird.
Yeah, but whatever.
And hey, that, I mean, everybody gets the happy ending. And then did you stay for the post-credit scene?
Oh, did I ever? And also, this is crazy because I owned this movie on VHS, watched it maybe 100 times as a kid. I never once in my life watched this scene.
I never did either.
And I knew that it existed because of the internet. So I told my friends, I was like, we have to fast forward through these credits and watch that. And there is a post-credit scene.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's like, it's, I mean, I got to do some, actually, that's, I really got to look at like the beginning of post-credit scenes. I'm sure that this is not it, but this it's is also like a big thing.
It's also hilarious because the movie is derivative of so many other movies. Yeah. And then Skeletor pops out and says a line from Terminator. It goes,
I'll be back.
Isn't that? That's what he says. And they also do a freeze frame. He goes, I'll be back. And then it's like, freeze frame. And it's just like, oh, God. And also it's like, and no, he wasn't.
That was it. Like, that was
they were
all.
Like calling their shot. They were like, sequel. And they're just like, no, guys, no.
Nope.
No, you will not be back. And until 2026, when Jared Leto will play you in a movie that we'll probably see later this year. So
now I feel like we got to. So
that is Masters of the Universe 1987. Do you know this cult classic, weird, low budget ripoff movie of Star Wars and the Dark Crystal and Superman and Superman,
Terminator.
Yeah, Terminator.
All the things.
Yeah. And what do you think about it?
Mm-hmm.
Let's get into scores for this movie. On our show, we give scores out of 10, 10 being the best. For technical achievement, we give scores for the ending, for rewatchability, for cultural significance and impact, and for our subjective feelings. So what is your technical rating for Masters of the Universe?
Okay, my technical rating. This is trying to be as objective as possible. I gave it a 4. I mean, the character motivations, they're just kind of doing things. It's like, it's not a very well-made film. The costumes are, you know, I mean, Frank Langella does great, but also, I mean, he's really hamming it up, and they accidentally, you know, happen upon Gwildor. There's not a lot of great stuff here as far as the filmmaking craft, even though they're giving it a lot. You can tell that, but it's not really good.
Yeah. I gave it a 5, and it should probably be lower. Yeah. I'm trying to be as generous as I can.
Yeah.
And what my points are all for are production design.
Yeah.
Costume design to a certain extent, not necessarily makeup design. Gonna lose some points there some of the stuff, these prosthetics that are like, this is like Billy Barty's face that just is like, nobody's faces move. And maybe it's just nostalgia, but I do think that this movie, we talked about the pace. The pace is nice, and it's got a vibe where even if you don't know what is going on or why anyone's doing anything, it's got a fun vibe about it.
Yeah. They're going for it, and it works. It works in that sense.
Yeah. So that's the nicest nicest score I can give it. How about the ending?
The ending I gave a 5 because he grabs the sword and he's like, I have the power. And it just kind of, it has a somewhat satisfying ending. The time travel though is kind of weird.
Yeah.
So that's what I gave it.
I gave it a 5.5, 5.5. I think that the final action set piece is the best one. Again, I think that this throne room set is like the most impressive set in the film, and it's sort of like where I think most of their budget went to is for like this set. I think it's hilarious that part of torturing He-Man is just taking away 2 straps of clothing. I think it's so
not
funny.
My straps,
and I have no idea what's going on with He-Man and his sword. I don't know but I like it, and I feel like the fight scene between him and Skeletor is aesthetically fun and pleasing, and that final scene is weird, and the time travel is weird, and the post-credit scene is weird.
Yeah,
but I'm trying to be generous here because we had a good time.
Yeah,
How about rewatchability?
Okay, rewatchability, I gave a 6. It's after rewatching it this time, I can rewatch sections of it, but I don't know, rewatching it from start to finish, I don't know. It was kind of a little bit harder watch this time just because of that. But I mean, it can be fun. I think this is a movie that I don't want to rewatch unless I'm with someone else.
Yeah.
And then the score is probably higher.
Yeah.
But it's a fun movie that you can rewatch with friends, which is what you did, which I would love to do as well. So it's kind of like, I don't know, I could give it a higher score, but I it's not one that I'm going to go out and watch again, and be excited to watch it. So
this is my highest score. I gave it a 7.5 because as ridiculous as it was, we talked about it for the rest of the weekend. I was away for a birthday weekend and we watched it on the first night, and we talked, and honestly, I have a nostalgic connection to the film.
Yes.
And even though I know that the movie's now, watching it as an adult, I'm like, it's not well made and it's not well written and it makes no sense. I am having a blast watching it. So I'm like, I can come back to this any old time. If someone said do you want to watch 1987 Masters of the Universe? In most cases, I'd be like, yeah, put it on. I'd be like, yeah, sure. And just because it's there's the weirdness of it and the stuff and the derivative stuff, the Star Wars ripoff stuff.
Yeah.
It's all fun. I don't know. And it's not annoyingly bad. I find it entertaining and fun.
Yeah.
How about cultural impact?
Cultural impact. This is an interesting one because I'm giving it a 7 because there's a lot of people that love this movie. And it was very similar to us. You know, you saw it as a kid and you remember it and you want to watch it again. And so it had a big impact. It didn't have a big impact when it came out. It was like a bomb, but it's done something significant. I think though a lot of the younger kids may not know it as well, but it's had a big impact. So I don't know, maybe I should give it more, but
yeah, I gave it a 6.5. I feel like if it had done well enough to justify a sequel, like the way that they mm-hmm. called their shot, then yeah. it would probably have a bigger cultural impact. But the fact that like we're seeing the first Masters of the Universe movie in 40 years coming out this year yeah. shows yeah. that in the larger cultural zeitgeist, it sort of came and went. But I do yeah. think that there's a cult audience yes. for this film that yeah. has the same kind of nostalgic regard for it that I do, mm-hmm. where it's sort of living in that same space as like Flight of the Navigator or something, where people are like, right. do you know this movie? And people who know it are like, yes, that movie's weird and crazy and I love it. Yeah. And it's like, yeah. doesn't make a lot of sense, but it's really fun. Or like Little Monsters or something. That's like, yeah. do you remember this Little movie? Monsters. Yeah. You know, and not everybody knows it, but the people who know it like it. So
yes. Yeah. Yep.
How about subjective score?
My subjective score is a 6.5, and most of that is for nostalgia.
Yeah.
Like there's parts that I was like, oh man, I remember this and oh, I remember that. And you know, so it is still a fun watch. And there's still good in this movie that you can yeah. take, and there's a lot of fun that you can have. Again, I think I want to watch it with friends now because I think it's a more fun watch in that way. But yeah. there's still some fun stuff that I get from my childhood out of it. So,
yeah, I put a 6 down. I had a good time watching it. It's not the same as like when we watched Ninja Turtles, where no, it was like, yeah. you come back to that and it's like, this movie's actually pretty good. And I was sort yeah. of hoping for that experience to be like, you know what? Mm. This movie, but it was like, boy, this movie's not very good. Courtney Cox is doing a good job. You can see why she got a career after this. Mm-hmm. There's certain things that are still like certain sequences that are still working the way that I remember them working. Yeah. And there's still just like an energy to it that I find really fun and mm-hmm. weird. And
yeah,
you know, but all the, I don't know, all the like ripoff stuff I didn't really care for as an adult more, because I just yeah. was kind of like, yeah. oh boy, you guys really were just sort of shamelessly
yeah
ripping stealing off. You know yeah. where I would almost think the movie would be cooler if you had like put more effort yeah. into making it its own thing, you
yeah
know?
I totally agree with that. Yeah
so anyway, fun movie. We are going to watch Send Help, Sam Raimi's new movie. We're going to go to the theater yep. again. So if yeah. you want to watch along with the show next week, that's what we will be watching. We'll give you our first thoughts, spoiler free, and then we'll do the podcast on it. Yep. And like, share, comment, subscribe, all that good stuff. And we will see you next time.
Bye-bye.
I'll be back.
I'll be back.